For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite lore cast on the Citadel.
Welcome to the Mass Effect Lorecast. I'm N7 the Legend.
And I'm Genesis. Join us
as we explore along tides of light
and through shoals of dust
to see where this lore began
and consider where it may go.
Spectres, welcome back to another exciting week of the Mass Effect Lorecast. And, you know, I have some late breaking news. It's coming in over our QEC relay right now. We're being directly controlled. And we are receiving our orders, our salvation through lore. Demands that we talk about Arya today. Jin, how are you feeling about Arya?
Oh, okay. Arya T'Loak is one of the most badass characters in all of Mass Effect. I bow down to her greatness and her glory. I am here for Arya.
And on that note, I have donned my badass N7 the Legend pun glasses today. These are my aviators, my reflective aviators that I started wearing on stream because I made horrible puns akin to that one guy from CSI Miami. And then putting on the sunglasses and walking away from explosions. So we're going to talk about badass things today, like Arya. And we are specifically covering a fan theory regarding Arya today because our Reaper tier patron, Commander Shrinky Shep, has demanded we do so, and that is his right as Reaper tier patron choosing one episode a month. So, we are talking about this fan theory out there. Have you heard of this before? It's surrounding Arya's true identity. And the theory suggests that Arya is a, wait for it, Spectre. That Arya is a Spectre. Have you heard of this, Jen?
I had never even thought about the possibility, but as soon as it was brought up, the wheels started turning. There's quite a bit of evidence for her being a Spectre, which is insane.
Right. Before researching anything for this episode, my gut reaction was, damn, there really could be something to this. And so I want us to get into the why this theory might work right away. We've compiled a list of evidence as to, and I put evidence in loose quotations, Turian quotations, if you will, evidence that Arya is a Spectre. Now, a lot of this is circumstantial, but it's a fan theory, so if you're like one of those guys who was like, objection, then just try to relax. Because we're going to discuss each of these points in kind of a loosey-goosey way. So, number one, wanted to go over, where did Arya come from? When this thought came through my mind, it was perhaps one of the most powerful. That for as much as we interact with Arya in Mass Effect 2 and 3, we really don't know that much about her. Like, at all. In fact, we get to know more about the Elusive Man's backstory than we do about Arya's. Think about how crazy that is.
Wow. Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I know so much about like Arya and her current role, but about what she did before she was on Omega, I have no idea. And it's like 300 years on Omega, right? If not longer. That There's a lot of missing history there.
And that's kind of the thing. How many years is she on Omega? And I found conflicting details about this. I didn't absolutely go back through all the game and then go through all of the moments where both Arya is on screen and she's off screen, but she's referenced. Arya is also mentioned a ton in the external media, which we will get into a little bit later, but yeah, how much time is she on Omega? I found one account from Arya herself saying that it was about 100 years from the time that she was on Omega and engaged in this like war for taking power of Omega, with Patriarch being in charge there. But this theory that we are debating suggests that Arya is essentially operating in deep cover on Omega, and that she has had this like entire other life before her time there. So what do we know about her background, right? What can we draw from the confirmed lore? Well, we know what she's told us, essentially, which is next to nothing. Here's how she responds. Just listen to how vague she is. When we ask her, literally, Shepard asks her the question, how did you get set up on Omega? And listen to a little bit of how she replies, okay? Listen to this. Oops, one second. I gotta fix my... screen here. Screen. This is the joys of live streaming. There we go. Okay, listen to how she replies.
That's as privileged as information gets. I have many friends and enemies I keep at varying distances. I don't count you among either. We'll see how useful you prove. Short answer, mind your own damn business.
One scan and we're straight to business. People are usually more concerned about who I am.
Your death was downplayed, but hardly what I call a secret. I had to make sure it was really you. You could have been anyone, anything. Whatever you need will come out on its own. I'm curious, but Omega doesn't really care about you.
Well, that was about as vague gets. She's basically telling Shepard to piss off.
Yep. And still didn't really tell us anything. It's mind your own business. I'm not telling you how I got established.
Drink your water and mind your business. That's essentially what Arya just told us, but in a very abrupt, in-your-face way. So it's very vague, right? But she does open up a little bit more later, where she is talking about Patriarch. We've spent a bit more time around her. We've scratched her back a little bit, so she is willing to tell us a little bit more. And if Patriarch sounds familiar to you, that is the Krogan that she somehow usurped, who was in charge of Omega. She took control from Patriarch, the Patriarch, before he was called the Patriarch. And she's been about 100 years in Omega at this point. So let's take a listen to this bit of dialogue where she elaborates, but Just a little bit.
When I arrived, Omega was lawless, a land of opportunity. I built alliances and destroyed the fools who wouldn't get in line, which was most of them. But Patriarch was something different. A powerful friend.
I'm surprised you were ever anything but rivals.
We were allies for 100 years. I suppose he decided that was long enough. Wasn't a surprise when he turned. He controlled the muscle, my people contributed more subtle action. Espionage, politics, assassination. Fortunately for me, his men had become accustomed to certain benefits of working with Asari.
Superior intel? Assassination?
That's cute. No, I took advantage of certain skills my people try to downplay. Patriarch's men abandoned him in droves. In the end, we fought face to face on this very spot. The toughest fight of my life. But of course I won.
Gee, I wonder what Arya was talking about when she said certain skills that her race tries to downplay. Jen, do you have any ideas what she meant there?
The mind meld? We'll go with that. Yes.
Mind melding. Shiala level mind melding.
More like Shiera.
Yeah, more like Shiera. You're right. There is very little she gives us about how she somehow got to Omega That's kind of the key and why I wanted to show these points, because for as much as she tells us about how she took control on Omega, which is still slim, she doesn't tell us anything at all about how she arrived on Omega or how old she was when she got to Omega. Yada, yada, yada. You get where I'm going with this.
Mm-hmm. And it also doesn't, she also doesn't tell us how long it's been since that fight with Patriarch. So that's where it's a little bit ambiguous for me. Okay, yeah, she was on Omega for 100 years and then fought the Patriarch, fight the patriarchy. But then how long has it been since then?
You know, there's another piece of information that we get about Arya's past from the Shadow Broker terminal that kind of sheds light on that, but not really. So apparently at some point before working as like a dancer at Afterlife or whatever she was doing in Afterlife, I can't remember off the top of my head, Arya was a super soldier. Did you know that according to the Shadow Broker DLC in the terminal, the dossiers that we get, that Arya spent 300 years as an Asari commando?
That is insane. Like, okay, I mean, I kind of get it and I can see that, but 300 years as a commando, that's a decent sized portion of your life. Whether you live to be 1,000 years old, okay, 300 years is still a significant portion of that.
Yeah, I mean, for human beings, right, that's like spending like 25 years of your life, right? As that's, you've literally spent like a career length as an Asari commando. And the fact that Arya doesn't mention this to us, at least to my knowledge, I don't think she ever does. She doesn't mention this to us. It feels like she's left that out on purpose and that there's a lot about her past that she will not discuss.
Absolutely. Because we don't find out about this anywhere outside of the Shadow Broker terminal. So she's leaving it out. She's leaving it out on purpose.
Right. So it kind of leaves us to think about what else has she left out on purpose, right? She refuses outright to tell us how she got set up on Omega. She later clarifies that she was already on Omega, and then somehow she ran into the Patriarch and had these ambitions of power, so she used her manipulative ways, so to speak, to usurp him. That doesn't really cover how she gained followers, because she references other people, that she and her girls. Okay, what does that mean? How did you consolidate that power? Overall, she seems to come out of nowhere, right? With all of this acumen, all of, not just this business acumen, but all of this clandestine operations acumen, all of this like experience and knowledge about how to manipulate certain scenarios. And she just, honestly, she seems like a CIA operative.
Yeah, just a little bit. And then she decides to kind of throw away that whole career and switch it up.
Right, because we do learn that it is established lore that she's spent those 300 years as a commando. Honestly, from what I remember in the lore, when you are an Asari commando, it's kind of like a linear career progression where after a certain amount of time, you go into the service of an Asari matriarch like Shiala did. Or you perhaps become a Spectre.
And this is where I think that this definitely has a big possibility that Arya is a Spectre.
Right. Because why would you, like, okay, so first of all, I don't know what Asari commandos get paid, but I would imagine it's pretty good. They are the most elite of the Asari military. So why would an Asari commando just up and decide to stop? That much is not covered in the Shadow Broker dossier at all.
Okay, so the next little bit of information that we have about what Arya was doing was that she, obviously when she hit on Omega, she didn't instantly become queen and she didn't instantly start with connections. She started as a dancer. So she was the girl up there on the poles working her magic, and that's where it came from. But also, haven't we all kind of been there? Life is just too much right now, or sometimes it's just too little, so you move to a new city and start a new life?
Okay, eh? I'll give you that. I have moved to new cities to start new lives, but I've never become a stripper. And I know that that's probably to the grave disappointment of, like, at least one person who's listening to this and is quite confused. I am as well.
I mean, throw caution to the wind, move to Vegas and become a stripper. Just go for it. Go for it.
I know my wife is watching this live stream right now, and so I have a personal question to ask my wife. If you knew that I was a stripper, would you have still said yes when I proposed? And why?
Oh. What if I was in a sorry? If you were in a sorry?
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, would she have said yes if I had tentacles in my head? I don't know.
I can't answer that question on Navi's behalf.
She just put with like four M's and then like a little emote of walking away. So I think I got my answer. Good thing I'm not a stripper or a sari or Aria. But you know what's funny? She actually did tell me that there, like, she had debated whether or not she thought that I was a spy when we started dating. And I think, well, I've actually told you about this when we've been out for drinks, Jen.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I remember the spy conversation. But I think that we are drifting a little bit here because I really want to talk about how Aria leaves so much vague that it makes me want to know more about her. So therefore, I'm going to read into everything that I can, because I honestly think that Aria as a romance option would have been amazing. I wish that we got more personal interaction with her. I think that it has everything to do with the fact that she is so unobtainable that I want her.
You know what? Aria kind of strikes me as, what's the actor's name? Robert De Niro from Meet the Parents. I can't remember the character's name right now.
Okay.
She kind of has that same air about her. Like the, oh yeah, Jack Talk Thai. Jack Talk Thai very well. Where you constantly learn new elements about Aria that you didn't otherwise know, and you're like, yeah, of course she was. Like, we were just talking about, she spent 300 years in a Sari commando. Yeah, of course she did. Is there anything at all that I could tell you that you would be like, yeah, of course, like, that you would be genuinely surprised that Aria did, and you wouldn't believe it?
Ooh. No, I don't think so, because with all the lore that we do learn about her, like, she was a mother, she has fought against, the Cerberus, she's done so many different things, and yeah, I believe all of them. I mean, I also kind of, I want to believe that she slept with Morden. I want that to be true, even though I know it's not.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, okay, if we were going to go there, then I have to bring up the Citadel DLC, right? Which I believe that reference is from. There's like a voice recording of Morden reading in a film noir kind of style where he has this explosive kind of sexualized, I guess you could say, encounter. But it's very clearly like just a tongue-in-cheek joke, and I don't think that she was actually like sleeping with Morden, although that would be kind of funny about how she knows so much about Morden when she directs us to him and only has positive things to say, by the way, so maybe that means he's good in the sack.
I mean, Morden broke the number one rule of Omega in more than one way.
Oh, I'm sorry, do you mean this rule?
Don't fuck with Aria.
I just had that on speed dial.
Yes.
I had a feeling that was going to come up during this episode, so I pulled the vocal line from the game and literally put it on my soundboard over here. All right, and with that, why don't we go ahead and go to the mid-break, because we have more evidence, a lot more evidence to discuss about why Arya might or might not be a Spectre. Let's go over to the mid-break, shall we?
One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging, it's often your hormones too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
We have beef, we have bacon, we have beer. The foods of my people.
Young men have funny ideas of what Asari are like. I blame the extranet and computer games.
Rex?
Shepherd.
Grunt?
Shepherd.
Rex? Grunt?
All right, and here we are in the middle of the show. This is the part of the show where we will read your 5-star reviews. If you've left some, bad news for us. No one's left any since last week. That's okay. We still have a bunch of reviews to sit on. You guys are all very kind in your words. I cannot believe that we have reached 1,000 ratings on Spotify, more than 1,000 reviews across all the podcast platforms. But go ahead and leave your 5-star review if you feel like saying something nice. If you listen to this every week, well, then maybe just let us know, because we actually do read these. Not even if we don't read them, even if we miss them on some weeks, we do read these. And frankly, these are like what make it all worth it every week. I don't know about you, Jen, but for me, they are.
Oh, absolutely. Reviews let us, because in all honesty, this is just you and me sitting talking to microphones to each other. And then we put the podcast out there. And if we don't get any review and feedback back, we don't know how to make things better. We don't know if we're talking down the right track. And getting honest feedback and reviews from people is the best way to make our show even better or continue where we're at and giving you the content that you enjoy. So if you like us, let us know.
Yeah. And you guys don't like need to stroke our ego either. If you have an idea about how to make the show better, please do, because that's part of the reason why we have some of the bits that we keep doing during mid breaks, because I just brought them out of a hat one day and then people responded that they liked them, like the planet card segment. We'll get to that in a little bit. But first, Jen, you have a sound effect and a voice line, a pop quiz for me. So I gotta place who this is.
Mm-hmm. I think we'll go with this one. Okay, here we go.
Do you ever pause for breath?
Sorry, I'll try to slow down. No. Can't do it. No time.
Oh my god, what a great voice line for you to pull, because I have no idea when that is. But I am sure that it's a Salarian, of course. And it sounds like William Salyers, so I'm going to say it's Morden in Mass Effect 3.
Do you want me to play it one more time?
Yeah, can you play it one more time? Because I think over Google Meets here, it is kind of eliminating some of the background noise, which might be a clue.
Okay.
Do you ever pause for breath?
Sorry, I'll try to slow down. No. Can't do it. No time.
Okay, now I'm wondering if this is Mass Effect 2 Morden. Either way, I believe it's Morden. And okay. I know that there are different voice actors for Mass Effect 2 Morden and Mass Effect 3 Morden, so Morden evangelists are probably pissed that I would confuse those. Is it Mass Effect 2 Morden right before the final mission?
You got the Mass Effect 2, you got the Morden. It's actually the first time that you meet him if you don't pull any of the interrupts in order to stop him.
That would explain it. I always pull the Paragon interrupt to be like, hey, 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 you don't need to, you know, yeah. That yeah. would explain it.
You go all the way through, and then because you get a renegade interrupt after that where you can just tell him, hey, shut up and listen, which is totally rude. That's one that I don't pull anymore. And then at the end, once he stops talking, Shepard can step in and go, do you ever slow down?
The answer is no. Morden is on meth. Okay, and with that, we have a planet card.
Scans have found something.
Look at that. I've actually finally introduced the ED voice effect to introduce planet cards. So, today, we've got Omega. Jen, why don't you do us the honors for reading the Omega planet card?
Okay. Built in the mined-out husk of a metallic asteroid, Omega has been a haven for criminals, terrorists, and malcontents for thousands of years. At times, the station has lain idle and abandoned for centuries, only to be reactivated by a new group of outlaws seeking a fresh start. The space station's original, elegant design has given way to haphazard expansions by scrabbling factions of every species. There is no central government or unifying authority on Omega, and nobody can recall a time there ever was one.
You know what I love so much about this planet card? It is so dripping with cyberpunk.
This is a very cyberpunk read. Yeah.
It really is. Like, I feel like this could apply to any of the space stations in cyberpunk.
Yeah. There's definitely a station that this would fit, for sure.
Yeah, and the fact that the space station's original elegant design. I wonder if that means that, like, the deeper you go in Omega, the more you can find some of that original design, and it looks gorgeous. And it is such a juxtaposition from the, like, shantytown aspect of the Outer Rims.
Right. I wonder, I mean, because a lot of space stations you would assume are very similar. So I wonder if it's almost Citadel-like or any of the, I guess we don't really see any other central hubs.
Yeah, you know what? It doesn't actually specify who built it.
Ooh, that's a lore rabbit hole we could go down.
Oh, and it is one that we will later. I've been kind of racking my brain about whether or not we should do a series of destination episodes, and maybe we should, like, whether that be whole planets, whether that be just levels, cities on planets, I don't know, but we'll figure out. Anyway, we've got some tier 5 shout outs to mention. We've got tier 5 patrons that we shout out every week. Today we're shouting out William, Superfly 440, Redtrobot, Lieutenant Tosino, Kira C, Ed Boy, and Draco. Thank you all for supporting the show. And of course, we also have our Tier 6 patron, Commander Shrinky Shep. Who has sponsored this specific episode. So go ahead and bow down and issue your proclamations of loyalty to Commander Shrinky Shep if you enjoyed this episode, specifically about Arya being a Spectre. And with that, let's get back to the rest of the show.
After time adrift among open stars, along tides of light and through shoals of dust, I will return to where I began.
Salarian reproduction different. Very little sex drive. If intended to try human, would try you.
Ow, my pancreas!
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
At BP, we've reset our strategy with a focused downstream, a growing upstream, and disciplined investment in the transition. See how we'll grow shareholder value at bp.com/reset.
All right, we are back. And Sam, there's some more evidence to this theory that we need to go over. Are we ready to dive back into Arya?
Oh, I'm always ready to dive into Arya. you knew what I was going to do when you read that in, too. So I wanted to bring up how Arya doesn't just destroy her competition. These gangs that are constantly vying for control of Omega, the Blue Suns, the Eclipse, the Blood Pack, all of them want her throne very clearly, as is to be expected from criminal gangs. So why doesn't she just destroy them?
That's a really good question. And I think that we can see a lot of this with, like, it's the power balance. You know, if one gang gets too big or one completely fades away, that's going to destabilize her power base.
Yeah, and I think it's a control thing. I think she feels more comfortable while she can control them, and it's easier to toss them a scrap every now and then and let them think that they are in control. But that alone illustrates, like, such a level of intelligence and skill in manipulating situations about power vacuums. You know, like, Garrus's side mission is a perfect time to launch a counterattack, right? And just wipe out all the gangs. They are all destroyed. All their leadership is in one place. You could flank them and completely annihilate them. So is she really interested in destroying them? I don't think so. Even though that would allow her to keep power for herself. And it would send a message to all of the would-be upstarts that would challenge her, right? I don't think that she is the typical tyrant, so to speak, despite the fact that she does silence dissent and she kills people who question her or try to act against her or cross her. Don't fuck with Arya, right? Shall we hear it again?
Don't fuck with Arya.
Thank you, Carrie Ann. This is kind of the point. Is this about destroying them and keeping power for herself, or is this really about maintaining some semblance of order? If, like, in other words, if none of the gangs can ever get a leg up on hers or the others, then they are all competing amongst themselves indefinitely, or at least they don't realize it. So that is, in a way, stability.
It is. And who would want stability out in the Terminus?
Exactly. Hmm. Who would stand to benefit from a stable Terminus systems full of pirates, slavers, and raiders? Yeah, okay, every now and then there is the occasional MSV, what was it called? Brontium Mule or something like that. MSV, you know, that gets, it's a merchant class vessel that gets it kidnapped or abandoned. Okay, well, whatever. The council has looked the other way for much greater losses tied to Spectre missions, right?
Mm-hmm.
The ends always justify the means for the Spectres. So if the means were horrible, like, you know, these merchants from Alliance space or Turian space or Volus space, okay, maybe this ship is just going to go missing, these people get tortured or sold into slavery. Oh well, if that's the course that we ha- or if that's the price that we have to pay for Arya maintaining control of Omega, which is, by the way, like the seat of power, if there is one, in the Terminus systems, then that's just the price we pay. That's me putting myself in the kind of corrupt Citadel politician way, which I feel like is pretty much a given at this point, that, like, Citadel politics is extremely corrupt.
not only the seat of power in the Terminus systems, but a major ESO holding in the Terminus systems. And that's something that they would definitely want to have at least some control over.
And if the Citadel Council did somehow wrest control over the seat of power in Terminus space, where all of the ne'er-do-wells and all of the slavers and drug traders thought that they were safe to go and practice their craft, if the Citadel Council did wrest control of that place, would they want people to know? Or is this a 4D chess move where they're like, okay, we don't want people to know, because if they know, they're just going to go back into hiding?
Exactly. Or move somewhere where it's even further out of the reach of the council. So I totally see the 4D chessboard here. I don't know yet if I'm playing on it, but I can at least see the board.
Like, right, yeah, like, what if they went as far as the Perseus Vale? Not necessarily in the Vale, because the Geth are there. Geth probably don't have a very lenient drug policy. But I can only imagine how much more difficult logistically it would be to try and monitor the situation. And how often do we hear the council trying to monitor the situation? They don't actually do anything, it seems, but they just like to monitor the situation, particularly the Salarians, who are in love with espionage and hands-off activity, or at least so it seems, hands-off.
Yeah.
So there's tons of doubt to go around about why does Arya seemingly want the stability of the Terminus systems. Of course, there's always the answer of, well, it benefits her for the time being. But there's another thing I wanted to address, right? So she helps Shepard with, like, no questions asked, with little question, if at all, and then next to no request for a quid pro quo. She wants him to help the Patriarch, honestly. Like, her preferred path seems to be, okay, please make sure he doesn't get himself killed.
Mm-hmm.
And she can hide behind that reasoning of, like, okay, well, you know, I don't actually care about him. I just want him as a symbol around, right?
Look, Arya has a soft spot. She doesn't let it show that often, but she does have a heart somewhere in there. Because, and we know this about her, because she obviously cared for... Her name instantly escaped my brain. The female Turian in the Nyrene. Omega DLC. Nyrene, thank you. Kira yeah. came to mind, and I knew that wasn't right. So she had a heart for Nyrene. She obviously cared about her daughter, and she cares about the people on Omega. She, you know, whether in that DLC, we can hear her talking about how, yes, the people of Omega are important. When she finds out that another person's daughter had been killed by an Ardok Yatshi, she's like, please, Shepard, I want you to go investigate this and find out what's going on. And yeah, you can say that it's just because she doesn't want somebody running around on Omega murdering people. Because
how different would that be?
Yeah. But I think it's because she honestly cares. And so, yeah, I mean, having Patriarch live and survive and being what she wants, I see that within her character.
Yeah, but she can't let anyone know because she has a facade to uphold.
Don't fuck with Arya.
We've definitely earned the explicit tag on this episode. So she helps Shepard, like, almost immediately in Mass Effect 2, right? Despite the fact that Shepard, him or herself, is a symbol of Citadel authority. Like, as a Spectre, former Spectre, be that Shepard died or was reinstated or whatever, Shepard is this symbol of authority because of their alliance military service, too. So, Arya often eats them for breakfast. These, like, symbols of authority type, these cops who would tell her no, right? She eats them for breakfast. So why is she so receptive when Shepard, back from the dead, totally normal, shows up on Omega. Of course, we learn a little bit more about this, and that this isn't totally a surprise for Arya a little bit later, because she was totally clued in on some dealings with Lyara and Farron. But that being said, that doesn't answer the question of why Arya is totally cool with, like, the Citadel's top cop in her sphere.
I've got no answer to that one. I mean, why would Arya trust us right out the gate? She says she doesn't trust us, but then obviously her actions speak louder than that.
Yeah, she gives the elusive man a harder time. Mm-hmm. For good reason, by the way. The elusive man is a less trustworthy individual. Maybe it's that Arya feels like Shepard is kind of like so paragon that they are easy to predict, you know? That they are this Boy Scout, but that only works with a Paragon. That doesn't really work with a Renegade Shepherd. So, and despite the fact of you being Paragon or Renegade, it all kind of turns out the same for how Arya trusts you. Now, naturally, that could be a narrative device, but at the same time, there's other ways for them to write that so that it's a little bit more believable with Arya's anti-establishment attitude. Okay, so you remember when Omega gets overrun by Cerberus in Mass Effect 3?
Yes.
Where's the first place Arya turns to?
Her secret hiding spot on an off planet, right?
No. I know you know the answer to that. It's the Citadel. The Citadel. And I have, like, a huge question. Why? Why the Citadel, right? You want to tell me the pirate queen who thrives in illicit activity, despises authority, turns the blind eye when red sand is being dealt through her neighborhoods, who Cerberus had tried to off their own agent, Paul Grayson, who was working for her, and she never thought to alert the Citadel authorities, CSEC, or the Spectres. So you mean to tell me this person would rather hide at the center of galactic power and government than on some uncharted world in a pirate den? Really? This is crazy to me.
That's another huge point in the Arya is a Spectre. Because why would she run directly to the Citadel? It just doesn't make sense. Make it make sense.
Right. Maybe it's an indicator of where her loyalties are. Because if her loyalties are to the Citadel Council, then obviously a galactic invasion of genocidal sentient machines is kind of like, you know, enough justification for her to flee Omega when it gets invaded by what? by a human supremacists, excuse me. Freudian slip almost. When Omega gets invaded by human supremacists, maybe that's a good enough justification with the ongoing Reaper invasion that she flees Omega and goes back to the council to check in with them in private.
I don't know. It's still not enough for me, because this is Arya T'Loke. She fled? Come on, no. She would have dug her heels in on Omega and fought to her last breath. Not ran away. Unless she had a reason.
She does try and fight a little bit, but it seems that when she knows her possibility of retaking Omega is out, like it is just not going to happen, or she'll die trying, she does do a tactical retreat, as Day Zero here in chat says, and she goes back to the Citadel, where she then tasks us with rebuilding her force, right? Now, I do want to say that her presence on the Citadel enables her to regroup and communicate through the most secure channel possible, and that's in person. She can still meet with the Citadel Council without having to tip off anyone else that she's talking with them. She can just go, and I'm sure the Citadel Council has a room that's completely comms blocked, right? They would have to have the most secure confidential conversations. So I have another chat here with Arya that we can dissect. This is in Mass Effect 3 when we first meet her, and I just want all of us to go into this with the point of view that Arya has fled from trying to retake Omega, failing, and now she's on the Citadel, and we run into her in Mass Effect 3.
So you admit you and your thugs are here illegally?
Yes, and it only took CSEC 3 weeks to figure it out.
I don't care who you are. You're required to go through processing like all other refugees. Come with me.
I don't think so. Shirk, get me the Asari counselor.
Greetings, Arya. Is there something you need?
I'm being asked to submit to immigration processing.
Of course you are. Done. What else can I do for you?
Nothing. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Okay, what else can I do for you? The Asari counselor asks Arya, while Arya lounges in a club on the Citadel, being confronted by an immigration officer.
Okay, this one to me, in the moment when playing through the games, I obviously wasn't thinking about like the greater implications that could be behind it, other than like, of course Arya knows the counselor. Of course she does. I didn't really ever think about why.
Yeah, and why does the counselor seem so malleable to Arya's requests? This is the thing for me where, okay, so first of all, that means that Arya somehow snuck on to the Citadel. First of all, impressive feat, not out of the realm of possibility for the pirate queen surrounded by master smugglers. But we know that the refugee docks are heavily guarded and regulated, which means that not only was she able to sneak her and her associates in, undetected nonetheless, but she had to go somewhere else around that, and she was able to evade CSEC's attention for 3 weeks.
I wonder if she came in through other channels, because like that's what we do. I'm sorry, I'm kind of refuting this topic here, but it just popped into my head that on the Normandy, we fly in and we go in through our alliance docks. I'm wondering if there's a different area that Asari non-refugees could be flying into, and she did take an actual legitimate route and therefore didn't have to go through refugee status because she wasn't claiming to be a refugee.
So you're asking if the pirate queen had access to diplomatic channels?
Ooh, okay. Yeah, I guess I am.
That's why they pay me the medium bucks. I'm kidding, but it's a viable point. It is a viable point. What if she had just another access point to get into the Citadel, right? Because, like, if she did, does that detract from this point of her being a Spectre? Does it add to the point of her being a Spectre? A Spectre would have another back channel, but so might the Pirate Queen for, you know, bribing people and things like that. As we already addressed, we know the Citadel Council is corrupt, but my question is, even if that's the case, even if she did bribe people to get onto the Citadel, why would Arya have such easy access to the Asari counselor? She had her on speed dial.
Yeah. Get her on the line and she picks up right away. Like, I didn't get sent a voicemail.
Yeah, please leave a message after the beep. Oh, you're telling me the Pirate Queen is on our Citadel? Like, why don't you go and arrest her, please? Because we've been wanting to do this for quite a while. She is a space pirate, like, undoubtedly responsible for Citadel officials' deaths, or she looked the other way because of them, or bad fortunes that befell the Citadel space or their powers. So her reigning on Omega hasn't, like, been exactly a peacemaker for the Terminus systems. And it hasn't exactly been this, like, I don't know, like humanitarian role for Citadel space. So things are still screwed there, and there are constantly tensions between the Terminus systems and Citadel space. The Council doesn't owe Arya anything, particularly the Asari Counselor, because if anything, Arya represents the worst of Asari space. She represents the worst that the Asari Counselor's race has to offer the galaxy.
I wouldn't say it's the worst. I think those are pretty good perks, but, you know.
I agree, but I'm thinking like in a sorry diplomatic political sense right now.
It's true, yeah.
It would be a huge political win for the Asari Counselor to be like, I tracked down the Pirate Queen. I had her arrested, and now she's serving time in a Citadel prison, and no one had to die because of it. That would be a massive political win.
Very much so. And yet she doesn't. She quickly excuses her refugee status and makes the poor officer walk away with her head held in shame.
Yeah, and like no and pushback like, from the Counselor at all. None. So yeah, that's kind of weird, right? Okay, there's another point I want to go over, which is that she catches on pretty quickly to the Shadow Broker spying on her. Okay, we get an example of this from a transcript of a recording that's found on the Shadow Broker's terminal in Mass Effect 2, in that DLC we already talked about. Now, Jin, do you want to read this with me? And it's a script, basically. And I'm going to play the role of the guy that Arya is interrogating, and you can play Arya.
All right, let's go.
All right, so it says, recording taken on Omega Afterlife nightclub, private room, 4:14 a.m. Door opens and closes. Ugh, what the?
Talos Enryx?
Who the hell are, hey!
Don't bother. Those shackles don't have a release catch.
You mistake me for one of your clients or something, lady. Let me out.
This was very good. The Turian's been at Afterlife for a week. Usually I spot them earlier.
Spot what?
I know you're listening through that speaker hidden in Enryx's collar. I bet Enryx doesn't even know who he's really spying for. Does he, Shadow Broker?
Shadow what? I don't know any... Wait! What are you doing?
You don't play favorites, Broker. I admire that. But what I don't like is how you think anything twitches a muscle on Omega without my knowing it.
Ah! Damn it! My face!
Feel free to waste as many lives as you want sending your agents down to my world.
Okay, listen. I'm working for a guy, but it's not what you think. I'm not... Ah!
Door opens and closes. Recording ends.
Note, Talos Enryx's death has not yet compromised our other agent placed in the Afterlife nightclub. Okay, so a couple of thoughts. Number one, they have another agent in Afterlife.
Who's that?
Now that makes sense when you think about in Mass Effect 2, the fact that there was a plot to kill Arya from the gangs, and we find that notepad during Garrus's mission, if I remember right. But no one in Arya's circle told her about it, and she's pissed about it.
Oh, yeah, the Batarian, right? The one that is supposed to be her, yeah.
Yeah, that guy.
That guy.
That fucking guy.
It also brings up the question, like, how and why is she so skilled at this level of counter-espionage?
Yeah, right? She knew immediately not only that there was apparently like some kind of mole, but she knew that she was being spied on. And then when she captured the person who she suspected of being the agent of the spy, then she also knew to talk directly into his collar because she found some kind of recording device there and she knew who she was talking to, the Shadow Broker.
Yeah, there are definitely layers to Arya that we will never fully explore.
Like she wanted the Shadow Broker to understand, you're playing a game that I'm better at.
Ooh, I love that. Man, Arya just gets more and more badass. I love it.
Right, yeah. So it's, you know, it's crazy, that level of intimidation. And granted, the writers could have just been trying to make this pirate queen even more badass. But how many pirates do we know? How many criminals do we know have this level of sophistication when it comes to counterintelligence?
Right. Normally, it's an entire crew that would be doing this. It's not just the one person who is skilled in so many different fields. She's diplomatic. She can fight and hold her own when it comes to combat, and then be able to also micromanage and stay on top of everything that's required to be the ruler of Omega. Oversee the processes of gathering and mining all the Izo, and I'm listing all of these qualifications and qualities that would be amazing for a Spectre.
Incredible organizational knowledge that she has, regardless of whether or not she's a Spectre, but the fact that she is so skilled in terms of combat, so skilled in terms of counterintelligence, in terms of business acumen, in terms of organizational knowledge, in terms of how to manipulate people. Yeah, it all kind of just flows together. And there's a little bit more for that Omega DLC. Do you remember when we help Arya retake Omega? She exhibits this classic Spectre quality, which I touched on a little bit earlier, that the ends justify the means. That Arya is so readily willing to let civilians die on Omega so that we can accomplish the mission, and that is pinning down Cerberus.
Mm-hmm. Not only is she willing to let the civilians die, but she's willing to rally them and get them to fight for themselves. Charisma and being able to assemble people to fight in a battle. Who else do we know that does that?
Yeah, right? No one I know. And, you know, we also see this attitude from her earlier, too. When we're doing the side quests to get the three gangs together, Blood Pack, Eclipse, Blue Suns, all to join Arya to try to take back Omega, Arya tells us that we've acquired an army willing to, quote-unquote, fight dirty, and that these mechs will, or mechs, mercs, rather, will do anything that respectable militaries will not. That sounds like the kind of black ops stuff that a Spectre looks for.
Yep. More and more Spectres. Like, that's exactly what it sounds like. Being able to ally people who normally wouldn't work together. Like, what we do.
Yeah. Speaking of that Omega DLC, in that DLC, we see just how skilled that she has become in organizing guerrilla warfare. So not only has she grown used to ruling Omega, she's also, like, incredibly skilled in acting as the leader of an insurgent force. Granted, she is the ruler of Omega. She knows Omega's terrain a lot better than Cerberus does, but she is clearly outclassed and outmatched by Cerberus' numbers as well as technology. And yet she leads a bunch of gangs and militants into battle, this superior occupying force. And that sounds exactly like what a CIA agent would do abroad.
Yeah. I don't know why this never clicked. How and why does Arya still remember all of the routes to get to mining shafts and down into so many different levels and areas that she no longer has any reason of going to. Like, when we're following her, she doesn't make any wrong turns. She never gets mixed up. She knows exactly where she's going because she has studied and she remembers the layout of her entire planet base. That's intense.
It is, unless someone was getting daily intelligence reports. And granted, she ruled Omega for like more lifetimes than a human would have. So there is that as well. But there's another point right at the end of the Omega DLC that I feel like kind of lends to this point that she might be a Spectre. And that is, if we leave her to her own actions, if we don't push back at all, then Arya kills Oleg Petrovsky, the Cerberus commander on Omega. And she kills him before the Alliance can get a chance to question him. The only instance in which she doesn't kill him is if Shepard pushes back against her agenda during that DLC. Now, you might think if her being a Spectre was a possibility in this circumstance, she wouldn't care what the Alliance do. However, she would care what Shepard does, and she would care what Shepard puts in his report. That, oh, well, interesting, Arya was not willing to bend to my insistence that Oleg be interrogated by the Alliance. Where does she get this level of authority that she thinks that she can defy me? I honestly think that, like, if I'm putting on my tinfoil hat, then I'm thinking, okay, she wants to tie up a loose end. And we know that she has a background with Oleg Petrovsky because of the external media.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely a loose end that she wants to tie up, and it's a very Spectre route to just make the loose end go away. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Silence.
You're not going to talk now. Now, there's another consideration to make. If Arya is a Spectre, then when did she become one? Before she arrived in Omega? After she attained power? I think this might actually be the most intriguing question. That if she's a Spectre, when was it? Because she hasn't acted alone for much of her life, it seems. She's acted as this lone wolf, doing all she can to make sure that Omega remains this stable seat of power in the Terminus systems. That's not exactly like chaotic evil, the kind of chaotic evil you'd expect from a pirate queen.
My vote, my money would be on after her stint with the commandos, and then she got tapped to go into a Spectre training. And then at that point, she was selected to become a Spectre, and her skill set of this counter-espionage, of this, you know, like, balking up against authority, not really wanting to fall in line, they were like, you would be perfect for Terminus systems. Go there. See what you can do on Omega. And then, of course, you've got to start at the bottom, work your way up the pole, and then you can go from there.
And it would have to be the deepest cover of any Spectre, because the Citadel Council and Citadel forces are not permitted to authorize, or are not authorized to operate in Terminus space. That's why we have to jump through those hoops as Shepard in getting reinstated as a Spectre. So basically, they make us bend over backward for plausible deniability. Okay, there's one more point. One more, most important of all of them. Arya is the only person to hold the high scores in both the Armax Arena and the Shattered Izo game on the Silver Sun Strip in the Citadel DLC.
I mean, other than me, of course.
No, other than you. And Shepard.
Yeah. I that's another point of her being Spectre status for me, because the only other person that I know that has high score in both is also a Spectre.
Does Barla Vaughn have a high score in both? I think it's just the arena, right?
Just the arena.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe Vega. I think Vega also has a high score on both.
Okay, but he's an N7 at that point, right? So.
True.
N7 nominee.
Yeah. Oh, all right. So, Sam, where are you sitting right now? Do you fully believe in this? Are you kind of wavering on either side of the fence, or do you know for sure it's not?
For me, I feel like it's a fun thing to think about, like astrology, where I'll talk about my astrological sign, and it's fun to talk about, but I won't take it too seriously. However, there is some evidence against this that we need to talk about.
Absolutely. And here we are with the evidence against Arya being a Spectre. Now, if she was a Spectre, then the immigration CSEC officer would have been notified before ever approaching her, because that could have ruined her cover in public.
Which is a great point. I want to say that, like, if she really was a Spectre, that ordeal would have never been a thing, let alone, like you said, in public. Just because it would have raised way too many questions about Arya's stated identity that would be uncomfortable for any deep cover agent. And unnecessary.
Yeah, if you're an undercover officer and you get pulled over, you go with the flow of things. You let them arrest you, you let them do whatever it is, and then once you are in an area where no one else is going to know your conversation, that's when you reveal that you are a UC. And if that was Arya, Arya never would have called the counselor right there in front of everybody and said, do what I need done.
Yeah. And speaking of Arya, you had a point that you wanted to bring up about her age that kind of pokes holes in this.
Yeah. So Arya is estimated to be about 900 years old. Are you telling me that she didn't make connections on her own? For all we know, the counselor could have gone to Little Thessia Elementary together. You know? She could have met her at any point in their long, long lifetimes, or that they were possibly commandos together back in the day, and it's just a friend calling in a favor, or matriarch to matriarch going, hey, I need this.
That's true. Yeah. With her being a commando for so long, she could have been serving as an acolyte under a matriarch who knew a matriarch that the Asari counselor subscribed to. And it could very well just be networking. It could also just be straight up bribery.
True. There's that too.
So, you know, we already know that the Asari counselor and the Asari government isn't beyond hiding things from the rest of Citadel space. They hid Thessia for how many thousands of years, right? The Temple of Athame is what I'm referencing. And they hid the fact that their entire race has a leg up on everybody because of the Protheans. So, you know, just small things. I also think that following the orders of the council, which is ultimately what Spectres have to do, that's why Saren became a problem, because at the very least, the council recognized he was a rogue Spectre. That's why they sent you after him. So following the orders of the council is just antithetical to the very person that Arya is. She would not obey a greater authority of any kind.
No, we see her constantly fighting against it. She doesn't take orders from anyone. She needs to be the one in control, in power, and running the show. She would not thrive. And I think that's why maybe she left the commandos, is because she couldn't thrive in a military type setting where you follow orders, you listen to chain of command, you are constantly... You are not in control of all of your own actions. You are listening to somebody else telling you what to do. And Arya couldn't do that anymore.
Yeah, not in control doesn't seem like her element. She needs to be in control. And that's why I think we see her a little bit uncomfortable with Nyrene around. Because Nyrene does take some of that control away. And she doesn't like being challenged that way. But speaking of Omega, that is where her knowledge is unmatched. The Omega DLC shows us how anything outside Omega, and we begin to see the faults in her knowledge. It's clear that she is only receiving intelligence reports from inside Omega. That is where she knows the most. Otherwise, she would not be so easily manipulated by Cerberus and the Elusive Man in some of that external media.
Exactly. And the external media is one of the biggest points for me on why she's not a Spectre, because we learn more about her day-to-day operations on Omega. We learn about her daughter, and there is never a mention, not even in her own internal thoughts, of reporting back to the Council on anything. Because whether or not you're an undercover agent or your own thoughts are your truest self. And so if you know that you are a Spectre, you know that you are supposed to be following this, you know that you're going to have to send reports, it's going to come up in your brain. You know, there's going to be thoughts, and that would be the point where the author would have put that into the book, that Arya had been thinking about ways of getting any of this information back to the Council.
Oh yeah, with her knowledge of what goes on in Mass Effect Retribution, she would 110% be relaying things back to the Council, at least little nuggets, and trying perhaps to set up a trap for the Elusive Man to walk into, if she held any kind of loyalty to Citadel space at all. Now, I feel like we could go on and on dispelling the points that we've already put forward about why Arya is not a Spectre, but at the very end of it all, I feel like if she was a Spectre, the writers would have told us. They would have just told us. They're not. Mass Effect is not one of those fictional universes where, at least as far as I know, there is a key plot element that is never revealed.
Mm-hmm.
Like even the dark energy plot line, which was never fulfilled, even that was partially revealed.
Yeah. There would have been a clear indicator, not something that we needed to read between the lines to figure out.
Right. Shepard taking that breath at the end of the extended cut DLC, notwithstanding. They did actually, you know what? They did eventually rule on that and specifically told the fandom, yes, if you get that ending, Shepard is alive. So there's really no debate there. Like, Shepard is alive in that ending. So anyway, that kind of proves my point about, like, I feel like the writers did their best to make everything as clear as they possibly could, even if they wanted to leave it a little tantalizing in the way that it was presented. Okay, I do have a final thought for people to consider. What if Arya being a deep cover Spectre was actually an in-universe conspiracy theory?
Oh. Okay, so it's not us as the gamers, but maybe Shepard is trying to figure this out. Maybe Shepard thinks that Arya is a Spectre.
Or what if it is a rumor being spread on Omega to try and delegitimize her authority?
Ooh. Okay. Yeah, because Omega wouldn't want somebody from Citadel space running the show.
No, they wouldn't. And it would be probably a successful propaganda campaign, because Arya's constant need of control would undermine her credibility as a pirate queen.
Absolutely. Wow, okay, because that would definitely then be something that she would heavily have to cover up. If that secret got out, she'd be dead. Like, anybody on Omega would want her out of the seat of power if they found out that she'd secretly been working for the Council the whole time.
And even if it's not the truth, it might be enough to convince some of her dumb henchmen.
Oh, and Patriarch totally would have spilled the beans way earlier.
Yes. Yes, that too. Patriarch probably would have known.
Yeah.
Which would have incentivized Arya to kill him off sooner. So,
yep.
Anyway, that is all we got for this week. It's a fun thought exercise about Arya being a Spectre, but Jen, where are you at with this whole thing?
I think it has ground, but there is enough logic-based evidence for me to say that she's not. I think it's definitely a very interesting idea, but there's enough evidence for it to say, no, she's a pirate queen, she's a badass, she's amazing, but she's not working for the council as a Spectre.
Yeah. Yeah. I also feel like, yeah, she is like, her abilities are somewhat inexplicable, and she is somehow skilled at so many of these different things, but a lot of them can be explained by writing necessities. I don't know if we have any confirmation at all in lore that she's even ever been part of Citadel payroll, but it is fun to think about. So thank you to Commander Shrinky Shep for bringing this topic to our minds. I don't know if we ever would have gotten to it, actually, if Commander Shrinky Shep hadn't brought it up. But that is our episode for this week. Next week, we've got the patron chat. And that is the patron chat for March 2025. Until then, Jen, how can people get a hold of you, and what do you got going on?
Yeah, so I'm on all the different Discords, my own Two Girls, One Ship Discord, and of course the Robots Radio Discord, and you can hit me up on there. You can also catch my two other shows, the Two Girls, One Ship podcast and the Cyberpunk Lorecast.
Heavily recommended, both of them. For me, I'm... I don't know how this next week is going to go. My wife is pregnant, and our son is very close to making his grand debut. You know, he could come at any moment, so I might not be there for the patron chat. I plan to be there, but things are very tentative for the next few weeks. So I am also streaming Cyberpunk, although I have neglected that responsibility over the past couple weeks. We've been nesting. Nesting is a new word that I've learned. We've been nesting recently and trying to get the place all ready for baby Legendito, I guess you could call him. But go ahead and follow me and follow the Lorecast. More importantly, follow the Lorecast on Twitch. We're trying to build our audience there, and you can also find us on YouTube if you want to see our beautiful faces. But until next time, Spectres, I think that's all we got, so we should go. Thanks for listening to the Mass Effect Lorecast. Reach out to us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Discord, Patreon, or email us at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.
Join us next week for more lore. Same space, same time. Or check out our live streams at twitch.tv/masseffectlorecast.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Wow. What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.